Welcome back, interweb friends. This is would normally be Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out, and normally Hollywood makes bad movies and we make fun of them. This is a special edition. We're calling it Start the Movie. I'm Alex Dunbar here with my regular Stop the Movie co-host Cody Wolf.
Hello.
And a room full of spectacular guests here from King Lee. We're gonna start, even though no one can see this because it's audio only. I'm gonna go counter or go clockwise. King Lee, producer and co-script writer, Tim Ferwito.
Yes, hello. Good to see you again, Alex and Cody.
The titular character, King Lee himself, Nathan Audrey.
Titular. Okay. Hi, everybody.
And writer, director, John Case.
You see the level of maturity I'm working with.
Normally in the show, we are ripping movies apart. And this one's going to be a little different because... This is, and by the way, a pleasure. Like, easily 75% of the movies I see, I can't speak for Cody, but like 75% of the movies I see are terrible for this podcast. So, whenever I get to see a good movie, it's like, you know, a dying man being given a bottle of water in the desert. You know, it's the greatest thing ever.
That's movie going in general these days, at least for me. Yeah. This
so
summer's
harsh.
Been tough.
Even when I think I'm seeing a good movie, my wife rented a movie last night, Broken City, which actually we're going to talk about in this episode because it has some ties to King. Well, it's sort of like the terrible movie version of King Lee. And I'm like, oh, this will be good. No, it was not. It was painful.
It was Mark Wahlberg, right?
Yeah.
No, I heard nothing but shit heaps of scorn for that.
Yeah, not good. Not good. Maybe see it. It could end up on this show. So, you know. But I don't get to see as many good movies as I liked. So it was, you know, we know all you guys. It was a real treat to see King Lee, and I think this is a fun chance to talk about a movie that we love, so we don't, for 1 week, we cannot be haters on something.
But don't hold back.
Well,
right. Yeah, it, absolutely.
Be gentle.
Yeah. Well, let's start off with, for people who haven't seen it, it's coming out on DVD now, and let's talk a little bit just about the premise of the movie, for people who don't know about it, who maybe have seen some of the hype, you know, the promotional hype that's been out there, but who don't, who are like, what's that all about? What's that business about? You know, I'm picturing a man saying, oh, Margaret, what's that King Lee movie all about? Who wants to take that one?
Well, it's about a mayor in the 1970s of Syracuse, New York, and it's very, very loosely based on fact. It's the mayor was named Lee Alexander. He was the mayor from 1970 to 1986. And it turned out that he was, you know, people loved him. He was incredibly well-liked, and he did a lot of good things for the city. And it turned out that he was corrupt the entire time, skimming off the top and all kinds of schemes. And this King Lee is basically a wildly fictionalized version of what happened, and you know, we took very massive liberties with the material and turned it into something.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to ask, just to double check, I did poorly in history, so you're telling me that Lee Alexander did not throw Ringo Starr out of a building.
You can't
exactly.
You cannot prove that he didn't.
Okay, we can prove he didn't. Yeah,
but no.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just want to clarify, and maybe to talk a little bit about tone. It is a dark comedy. But it's also a story that kind of has a heart. You know, at its soul, the movie has a lot of heart to it too, and it's kind of, you know, as someone who's seen it, and Cody, I don't know what you think. I mean, I think it's a fascinating blend of comedy with heart, you know, with a real hook storyline that's also, and real characters that are also going on in there too.
I think it's
really sneaky like that. Like, it starts off with a kung fu fight with Ringo Starr where he gets thrown out the window.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, okay, so this is what this movie is. And then as you go along, it sort of sneaks in a little bit of heart and a little bit of pathos. And, you know, by the end of the movie, it's less about the comedy and more about, you know, the characters kind of thing. But But I think it's really sneaky in the way they do it.
Yeah. Almost like come for the comedy, stay for the characters.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think Tim said something interesting yesterday. He said that, you know, people don't have time for people don't have time for cynicism. And I really agree with that because, you know, we didn't set out to make something that was cynical and kind of mean-spirited or you know, kind of just fluff. You know, we wanted to make something that we were passionate about. And, you know, we wouldn't have stuck through all the difficulties of low-budget production if it was, you know, just some kind of...
Falderall we were tossing off or something, you know.
Do you have a dictionary handy?
Falderall.
Falderall.
Yeah.
That's going
what
in.
What kind of podcast is this?
Yeah.
Sorry. Is this the word of the day?
It was Will Short's going to come out now and take a small portion of the show. No, but the thing of it is, you know, this movie that we wrote, John and I together, really came from the point that we wanted to do a story that was about Syracuse, which was, you know, it's our homes. John was born here. I lived out in the area my whole life. You know, we got Syracuse TV, Syracuse radio, and newspapers. So I might as, you know, like I lived in a suburb for Pete's sake. But the fact of the matter is, this is a city that we love. We wanted to make a movie that was about this city that we love, and to talk about why we love it. And when you love something dearly, you also have to, if you love it, you have to see it for its flaws. Mm-hmm. And this is city, Syracuse, is a city like so many others in the Northeast and throughout the country that, like, you know, are facing difficult times, but how the city regards itself determines how they're going to get through those difficult times. Yeah. Syracuse is one that is only just now seeming to get back on the track of belief in a brighter future. Why was it dismal for so long? What were the causes of that? And I think that was a strong part of what we wanted to get
through. I think that's what's fascinating, too, is this movie is set in the 1970s, but the issues that are being talked about are incredibly current. This is a debate and issues that are very relevant to a lot of Northeast cities and Midwest cities right now, like in this moment, and probably something we can almost appreciate more now than maybe even in the 70s that mm-hmm. this could have... come on.
Well, yeah, I think I like that one scene in the movie where you kind of flash forward to today and you kind of see that, like, how things have become and could continue to go, you know, to that place. And I thought that was kind of interesting to see compared to Lee's time and how everything was more fruitful mm-hmm. then.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's favorite scene. And I you know, I've always been fascinated by this idea of having a dystopian future be today, right now. Like this thing is horrifying. The mayor is kind of transported through time in this hallucination, and he's horrified by this dystopian nightmare that is
our current life.
Yeah. I kind of stole that from an old script that I wrote about a space woman who comes and finds our world and finds it absolutely horrifying.
Oh, we saw that. They made, they based Glitter on that.
They did. I sold off cheap, needed the money.
Yeah. Well, and Nathan, maybe you could talk us through the character. I mean, the character of Lee mm-hmm. is so central to this movie. He's in essentially every scene. You know, and going all the way through, and kind of maybe you could take us through this character, you know, that you built.
Well, I think, like, the really interesting thing is that Tim and John keep talking about, you know, this relevance to Syracuse and, you know, all of these big passionate ideas that are in the film, and it's true, and they are, but it really is, it's a comedy. It is, and a lot of the way I ended up approaching it was that it's a tall tale told by Lee himself. So it's not at all true. And in it, there is the idealized self and the idealized version of the way, you know, he approaches himself. Like a 70s action hero, a complete badass, you know, kind of thing. So, and I think every now and then there is that little slip in of the actual humanity of it. But Yeah, I mean, I think that just the actual telling of the story is as important as the character itself, because the character is telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
And you really get to see the idea that what you're seeing is not necessarily true, but, you know, kind of his version of reality that's turned up to 11.
Right.
You know?
Right. We've got a fractured reality.
Yeah.
And to give people some background, too, before, who haven't seen it, you've done a series of screenings here in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. I know the first screening was sold out. I was at that one. And the second,
they all were capacity crowds.
They were all capacity crowds. I mean, you know, fantastic response to this movie. If you,
we could have sold more tickets at the final one if the ceiling in the balcony at the Palace Theater hadn't collapsed into all the seats.
That's right.
The balcony was closed.
God knows how many times I've said that. the movie's getting a fantastic response. The Syracuse New Times review, for people at home, if you want to Google it, I think presents a great picture, you know, of the movie and why people should see it. And the thing I wanted to ask Tim and John about, and we talked about this a little yesterday, is what was fascinating to me in the movie and in the casting of Nathan is his character is so central to this movie, and we're going to lay it right out. If he had stunk, if you had cast a bad actor, this movie would have been disastrous.
Yeah, frankly,
maybe you can talk a little bit that, you know, what a relief to have, you know, Nathan be able to come in and kind of work with the material, the vision you guys had and his performance and how that, I mean, without, I mean, that was mm-hmm. a crucial component. Well, yeah.
And the thing is, though, we didn't know Nate. We hadn't worked with him before.
Yeah.
We found out at our first meeting that he and I tangentially knew each other at college 20 years ago. But, you know, we weren't anyone that ever were really close friends then or even kept in touch afterwards. All of a sudden we just revisited each other. And it was on that first meeting that I realized that, you know, I've never seen this guy work. John says that he watched some stuff online. I'm going to trust that what he saw was good. Otherwise, he wouldn't have sent me out to meet him. When I met Nate, all that I came away with was that here's a guy that, at the very least, based on what we've talked about in terms of movies that we like and background and all these other different things, that even if he wouldn't be that great in the role, at least I'm meeting a guy that knows what we're going after, and that right. is going to be a big part of what he needs to right. to do. And like, you know, the fact that, I mean, when I spoke with him within a couple of days after having given him the script, hearing his reactions to it, I knew that, like, more than half the battle's over. This guy understands what we're going for. So, I mean, what were your...
Well, you know, this movie wouldn't exist without Nate. I mean, I really consider him a co-author of the work because mm-hmm. he's in all these scenes, and his this character that he created out of thin air was... you know, it's all him. It's mm-hmm. He reads there's quite a few, you know, the dialogue is quite difficult and it's, yeah.
What is it?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote this, Tim and I wrote this in like a very kind of, it's very, everything about it is stylized. The dialogue is semi-Shakespearean. There's some exposition scenes where he talks about, you know, municipal business, and it's a little dry, but, you know, watching it back, Nate brings it to life in a way that is, like, mm-hmm. kind of astonishing. He just, like, he has these moments where you really believe he cares about municipal zoning, and it's, like, important to him, and
yeah.
it's, like, if he was just spouting off dialogue without any feeling behind it, you know, you wouldn't be interested, but, you know, there's an early scene where he's talking about eminent domain, and I really believe he cares about that, you know?
No, it's actually really true. I mean,
The funny thing is I have no idea what eminent domain is to this day.
Yeah.
John and I, we wrote words, we wrote a plot, we wrote a script, and we, you know, dialogue, but he took a look at what it was and figured, and like, you know, we talked about, like, you know, who was this guy and what are we going after? But his interpretation of it and what it needed to be. I mean, like, you know, on day one, it was a fully formed character. I mean, like, you know, the first day of shooting was at the State Tower building, and it's a meeting of Nate with his inner circle of advisors and people that get stuff done, his crew. And that was the first day of shooting. And hearing him talk about all this stuff, like John was saying, like, you know, here's about zoning this and, like, construction that, like, all this really dry stuff. But he's doing it in a way. I was sitting in the other side of the room. I was sitting behind the flats, you know, just kind of listening to what was going on. And I'm thinking to myself about how he's going to be approaching scenes later on. I'm like, I'm hearing what he's doing. And I'm thinking about different scenes. And I'm like, I wonder how he's going to be doing that. I mean, like, you know, what he was doing was already so vivid. On day one, when everyone's, like, just feeling each other out and screwing up lines and all that kind of crap, he's already pulling off in such a way that I'm, like, looking forward to what he's going to do with other stuff later on. He was tip-top. The first time we actually got to see her character actually wasn't...
It was the Kickstarter video.
And right even then, you nailed it. You did an excellent job with
that.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
Nate's blushing. And
I am. I was just, like, getting a little teary-eyed. I was like, oh... Keep going.
This is also, by the way, some of the first times compliments have ever been.
This is true, too.
Yeah.
Well, what did you think about bringing forth, and, like, what thoughts did you put into making this character?
We were, Alex and I were talking about this yesterday, and about, like, you know, developing the character and the process and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I did, you know, I let John do the research and then read some of his stuff that he found. And, as I was doing it, I was like, I don't want this to be an impersonation, you know, of what Lee was or anything like that. And I think that the whole, like I was talking about, the whole idealized version of himself, I don't think that it necessarily, you know, I didn't want to play Lee Alexander. And for me, when I finally, it was one line, and that was my key into the whole character, was the whole, what does it take to be a good mayor?
Mm-hmm.
And once I figured out how to say that line, the rest of it was easy. Then every single time I would, right before I'd go on set, I'm like riding up in the elevator, the State Tower building or whatever, I just go, what does it take to be a good mayor?
Huh.
And then I'm like, and I got it. Let's
go.
That's
not even in the film. That's in the Kickstarter video.
No, it's in the Kickstarter thing. But that was that one line, and I was like, that's the character right there.
Cool.
I still got that piece of video, and I do actually watch that from time to time because... You know, the menace that you put into that is kind of like, whoa, that wasn't on the page.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing is like coming from a, you know, an indie horror background kind of thing, it's like menace I can do. That's no problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, pull out a machete. Yep, got that.
Actually, no. I mean, in case the people listening to this would like to hear more, I mean, like, you know, what is your background? What other films have you done?
Well, I've done such film classics as Cottontail, where I played a German immigrant farmer who was bitten by a genetically altered rabbit and became a half-human, half-rabbit monstrosity.
That old chestnut?
Oh, yeah. It's a classic. In fact, for the longest time that, you know, when they, like, list your name in credits kind of thing and in articles, and they go, Nathan, name of film here, last name Fodre. And it was always Nathan Cottontail. This is going to be my legacy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the movie, and it's dumb as hell, but it's just like, it was so much fun to do.
Yeah.
Were you in Poltergeist?
I did all the monster noises for Poltergeist.
That was what you did. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I had that in my Netflix queue because I want Sarah to watch it.
Yeah, when the Colonel Sanders character shits out an egg and then the monster pops out of the egg and goes, that's me.
One take.
Yep. Actually, I was recording the monster effects for that at Troma, and the effects, the way I was doing it was like so far back in the back of my throat, I thought I was going to throw up at one point. I was just like, hang on, it's like, I'm going to puke if I keep going. And he was like, if you puke into the microphone. Oh my God, this is so trauma.
Yeah,
I have a friend who will be very, very impressed that I worked with the man who voiced Poltergeist.
Yeah, I almost threw that in last night. I was looking through my movies, and I had that one. I was like, I for some reason, almost threw it in.
Well, perhaps that can appear on the podcast, and it should be. And you can have a luminary from the film.
That's true.
Just four guys sitting around at the table yelling at Nathan.
Right. What the hell are you thinking?
I didn't sound effects. Yeah. Why are you yelling
at me?
Chicken.
Do the chicken.
Well, speaking of, you were talking about the character earlier and the research. I know I was talking to Tim at one point, and he was saying how a lot of these things, kind of the goofier scenes and lines and stuff, actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
The movie's not very biographical, but some of these things actually happened.
Ooh.
And like how many of that, how much of that stuff was kind of real stories?
Yeah, and... I mean, like John had a whole thick stack of stuff, and I read through all, I read everything once. I didn't pour through it and retain things the way that John did when he went through everything. Mm-hmm. He kept going back, and he found, you know, all the most amazing little stories or side details that I had since forgotten about, and turn these into, you know, like pretty much all the major plot points are things that happen in real life. Yeah. It's different points over his 16-year span that wound up shaping the course of the film.
The funny thing is a lot of the actual, the stuff that you wouldn't believe is the stuff that actually happened. I mean, that you wouldn't believe that wasn't, you know, Kung Fu Fighting Ringo Starr.
The reason this was so kind of a breeze to write, I wrote the first draft based on our notes the first night we talked about actually doing this movie. I wrote it in about 5 days, and the reason it was so easy, it's got a very classical structure to it. This film is structured like any kind of Hollywood movie. And so, that,
really, wait, no kidding.
I guess you're right. It does have the structure of just like
it has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah, I was like, I
remember Jaden Smith coming in to ruin it.
Yeah, we are talking about a movie where a woman pops out of a suitcase and Ringo Starr goes out of a window. But it does. But I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well,
that's right.
Yeah, that was kind of. I mean, that was kind of. I've never written anything this conventional in my life. I mean, I know that sounds very, very strange. But yeah, it's got a very classical structure to it. It's got a climax, it's got, you know, the second act turn, and, you know, whatever these screenwriting terminology things are. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, in writing it, I could, since it was this weird blend of fiction and fact, I could, if I got stuck on something in the structure, I would go back to the research and find some weird plot point, like his trip to Panama, his frequent trips to Panama, or you know, marijuana being found in the mayor's estranged wife's house. You know, I could find these little details and fold them into this kind of intricate plot that we've constructed. And so that's why it was so, you know, if I got bored with making things up, I could go back to the history, and if I got bored with the history, I could go back to making things up.
And we should say, disclaimer, this show has several connections to the movie. Sometimes contributor Andy Wolf, also known as that cantankerous old grouchy guy who's on this show, or the Twitter account, Randy Andy Wolf.
Randy Andy Wolf.
It is a somewhat authorized parody Twitter account.
It's my barn doors.
Yeah. He was doing a lot of the lighting on this movie.
He did. Honestly, he is. I've thought a lot about Andy since we wrapped up production. And,
so have I.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks good for his age, doesn't he? Yeah.
He's an incredibly good-looking older gentleman, and he is honestly some kind of genius. I mean, he is what he did with the lighting in this film is like, it's not only remarkable for the low budget aesthetic low budget limitations we were dealing with, but damn it, it looks really good, and it looks like it. He evokes the 70s in a way that's
that only a man that was that old in the 70s.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, you know, if he didn't have this excessive humility, I think it would be more apparent to most people his genius.
Yeah.
He is this so overly self-effacing and like, well, gee shucks, I don't know. And like, he's just got this quality that's so endearing, and that's why he's so funny on your podcast.
Yes. And we also, Cody, we should make a note to remind ourselves to edit that portion right when we get.
He's never gonna.
Yeah, we should edit that out.
And we can't ever hear anything good about him.
That's right.
Yeah, Andy will probably.
Well, I was just gonna say that, you know, it's like you. This is probably the first time I've ever heard you say anything nice about him.
No, it's
like
funny.
When you're on set, you know, you just abused the hell out of him.
Well, that's how you get the best out of him.
He's like whipping boy.
I'll tell you a funny story.
Andy doesn't work well without abuse.
On the last day of shooting, I was sitting with Andy, and I said, listen, you know I'm not that effusive with you. And his eyes go really wide, and I'm like, what's your problem? He didn't know what the word effusive meant.
And, so actually, well, he thought the power was out.
Actually, I think the issue was he didn't know what the word you meant. So, yeah, he wasn't. Yeah.
Why are you not effusive with sheep?
Yeah, pronouns are difficult. Yeah.
He was saying that there's plenty of lines and words in the movie that he didn't understand, like instantiation. I think it was one of them. And
yeah, that didn't make the final cut. That's funny. Yeah. Well, actually, Callie had to look up. I mean. I'll be honest, like those were a lot of those words I didn't come up with out of the top of my head. I had to look up a lot of Caroline's lines. I had to kind of do some research and find like more arcane words for things, more arcane insults, and so I can't take credit for being able to conjure that kind of material.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking yesterday. I was saying that the way I ended up, when I got the script and the way as I was working on it, the way I broke it down was the same way when I do a Shakespeare play. And that there's also, you know, when you're doing Shakespeare, there are lots of stuff that I'm like, well, I have no idea what the hell that means, so I'm just going to say that part fast.
And
and just we'll skip over that and hoping no one notices, you know?
Yeah. And lots of other connections. Friend of the show, but hasn't been on the show yet. Dave Fulkerson was the cinematographer.
Yes, Fulkerson.
He is a genius.
He is legitimately,
and we don't even have to edit that out. Like we can leave that in. Dave,
yeah, I like to take. I think you know, years and years and years and years ago, I was in a band, and he took. He was a friend of one of my bandmates, and I.
Your only bandmate.
My only, well, at the
it was a duo.
It was a duo. Let's not get into that. But the way I met Dave Fulkerson, he took our photos, our band photos. And even back then, there was a quality to these photos that was like, wow, you got some kind of eye. Mm. And so I've always wanted to work with Dave Fulkerson and just leech off of his, you know, monstrous genius.
Yeah.
Well, that and he's probably the only person who would actually understand the direction. Okay, I want it handheld, but not handheld.
Yeah.
Come on, everyone knew what that
meant. I knew that. I know that exactly.
Handheld,
now.
But not handheld. Yeah. Everyone knows
but
what
it's
that
like, I remember when the first time you said that, and I was like, I wonder how he's going to
interpret. The only other place that really
this.
Exists is like, you know, in like the regulations for Las Vegas whorehouses.
Oh, okay. I assumed you were going to go that direction with it. Yeah.
Hey, we're on Cody. I know you were on set.
A couple days. Yeah, the last couple days.
Cody was there. I have a cameo in the movie.
You have.
I was very
you have
nervous.
A delightful cameo.
I was very nervous. I didn't. When my wife and I were going to the screening, and she was like, "Are you in this?" And I said, "Well, I'm really like, you know, I'd done some stuff, and I was like, I don't know, you know, I know the editing process, and I'm like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to tell her like, yeah, I'm like, well, we'll see. I'm like, because also I was on set for all of like, I mean, we shot my stuff in like 20 minutes, you know, so I was like, this could be cut in a heartbeat, you know, so it was very, but you know, she got a good chuckle.
You get good reactions. You really do every single screening. Because like. A, there's a number of the script. There's a number of the audience that's just laughing because of your wig.
The wig is the real star.
But then the other half is realizing, oh my god, that's guy from Channel 3. Holy moly! And then there's the combination.
I think there's that Venn
diagram of the people that are laughing because it's you in a wig.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you get some good laughs like that. You actually deliver that line really well. But that thing you just said.
Don't give away. Come on.
It was. I had a ton of fun that day. And the thing I always tell people is every take we did, the take had to end because I couldn't not laugh anymore. Like, it was just like, how long can I hold this?
Oh, I was laughing too because
comes out,
the other fun. Yeah. I mean, there's layers and layers upon in that particular scene. I mean, personally, that's my favorite line in the script. And you just knocked it out of the park. But also. I asked Dave Fulkerson to be the worst cameraman in town. I said to Dave Fulkerson, you're shooting this too well. Can you like just amp up the badness of this? Like be a bad 70s cameraman?
Yeah.
And so David Fulkerson's acting behind the camera as well. And if you look at that scene, look at how bad the camera work is.
Oh, it's hilarious.
And it's not white balanced properly. And
there's like way too much headroom. It's
fantastic. Oh my God. Just watch. I tried to get video of this, but like I was standing behind him and just watching him
yeah.
do this. He was doing this weird chicken walk
yeah.
backwards. yeah. And yeah. I
didn't realize that was why you were laughing. So
oh my God.
I remember that day. I was just sitting over on the bench, just staying out of the way of you guys doing stuff. And I was like, why does John keep breaking down in laughter? Why is John about ready to vomit from laughing so hard?
My sister was there taking photos that day, and there's one photo of all of us gathered around the monitor watching the take, and like I got this ridiculous cheese-eating grin on my face because that's literally one of my favorite shots in the movie.
And I have to bring up, too, one of my favorite laughs in the movie does not come from any actor. And in fact, it was almost like as a human who's like done stuff, I was like, oh, the best laugh in this movie is going to an inflatable couch. You know, maybe not the best laugh, but one of my favorite laughs. And it is, I don't want to give too much away, but if you're a fan of comedic timing in editing and all these things, there is a scene involving inflatable furniture that if you're not laughing at it, something's wrong. Like, you need to have your comedy reference-o-meter adjusted if you're not seeing it. It's a fantastic moment.
Well, I'm going to... I'll save the story about the inflatable furniture for the DVD commentary. And please go out and buy the DVD.
That's right.
but yeah, that was... That's one of those things that I don't know if inflatable furniture was a thing then.
It existed,
but like it was more 60s, I think, wasn't it?
You know what? In the context of the movie, I totally bought into it. I'm like, yeah, that could have been a thing. You know? Like, that could have been one of those fads that came through in the 70s, right. And you know,
it was one of those decisions that we had to make by necessity. So.
Yeah, that's kind of the definition of happy accident, right?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of those in the movie. The low budget constraints kind of bring out the best in people a lot of times. And since we had so much talent on this movie,
and such a low budget,
it was like
imagine what we could have done with only $80.
Yeah. Well, next time we'll do that.
Well, and that's the biggest pitch I would say to people for seeing it. You know, is that this does not look like a micro budget movie. This looks like an independent film.
I was going to say because I think it's that you had two of the most important aspects, which was good lighting and good shooting, I think, make it look like a real movie, which is obviously the acting too was
but great. It also had a lot to do with support from people and places in the community letting us use their resources. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, we had sets that we never could have afforded on our own nor constructed.
Right.
You know, if it wasn't for the lending of the use of the Hotel Syracuse, of the State Tower building, other different locations.
I think, especially that office set, looking out over the city, just gave it scale.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, being able to have the entirety of the city of Syracuse behind you as a backdrop already lent so much to establishing the credibility of this character being the mayor. You know, having the entire city below in your purview.
Yeah.
You know, every angle that you look at just about in this entire film set in that setting, you see the city behind him, all around him. You know?
And not to mention Jason Kohlbrunner's stunning wall.
Stunning fake wall work.
Yeah, that wall, I don't know if I should give this away, but it looks great on camera. That wall is about a quarter of an inch thick, and what is it? Some kind of...
It was old...
Contact paper.
Yeah, right? it was contact paper. Like it was plywood.
Yeah.
Not even plywood, like really thin, like paneling.
Yeah.
We put contact paper over, and then we made like the fake black lines that would be on like old style wood paneling. It was just electrical tape.
When I showed up there, it had been half built, and Jason's like, oh yeah, don't worry about it. It'll get built. And so he's building the wall while we're shooting, pretty much. Yeah. By the end of shooting, we could get the angles that we couldn't get because it wasn't built yet. And in fact, in some scenes, I think, he's holding up a piece of the wall.
Manually.
Yeah, and so it's that kind of thing, I think. We're most of us have a TV background, so we're all professionals in some capacity. So this was something we did for fun on our off hours, and... we kind of brought the kind of these skills that are lacking from a lot of lower budget movies. to something that's, you know, I'm sorry. I've been doing this yesterday.
I actually want to pick up just from what we were just talking about, which is that, like, you know, we gave. I really want to be able to shout out, you know, great praise to Jason Kohlbrenner,
who's just
the most amazingly pleasant person to work with. So professional, giving. I mean, like, you know, no matter what was going on, whatever needed helping, he was there. I could not say more nice things about the man.
He's
worthy of every moment of praise. Yeah, he's just so great to work with.
And not to mention the icy calm of Jameel Muna.
Seriously.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It's like, he handles everything so professionally, but so low-key, you actually don't think he's doing a damn thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're like, Jameel, what are you doing? Well, actually, he's been doing just about everything.
Yeah.
But he's just so calm and quiet about
and
it.
And he
not
doesn't,
noticed.
Yeah, as a director, I never, like, I'd turn around and he was holding a boom, or I'd turn around and he's pushing a fake bookcase.
He would just start
doing these things that I hadn't even asked for.
If there was a break in something, he'd be working on the call sheet for the next day.
I should mention that he's a very, very talented filmmaker in his own right, and he's got his own films up on Vimeo somewhere. I wish I could give you a website, but he's definitely someone to watch.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, and to tie this a little bit, I wanted to kind of steer this conversation. One of the things I want to talk about in relation to King Lee and also in relation to the movies we sometimes do here is we did a movie recently called Drive Angry. And
I love that movie.
Me too.
It's brilliant.
I mean, you know, horribly. What's funny is we didn't enjoy it as much. And some of the reasons, I mean, it was one of our more controversial episodes and we had a lot of different opinions and we liked things in it, but we didn't like other things. But what actually frustrated me most about a movie like Drive Angry was that it wasn't willing to go as far as King Lee was. Mm. It felt very restrained.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
You know,
it wanted to be a gritty exploitation kind of movie.
I'm gonna recycle a joke I made. It was like a gritty exploitation script that the Grey's Anatomy crew shot. You know, but it looked very like it was like, oh, okay. Like, it, you know, everyone was kind of afraid to go
to,
all
to completely yeah. commit.
To yeah. completely to commit. Turn it up like, to 11. Really, to go to 11. It was like, man, we'll take it to, we'll take
we'll
it
to
8.
9.5.
Well, like we were talking about, crazy, like Nicolas Cage is like asleep during the movie. He's not giving any juice. Yeah. Or
he may be asleep in some scenes.
But the other dude, William Fichtner.
Oh,
I loved
the Bill Fichtner stuff. Yeah. I thought he was the best part of the film.
Yeah.
Actually, everyone's saying he's the best thing about The Lone Ranger right now is his...
Oh, yeah, I don't know if I can
say that. I'm not going to...
I would say that.
I'm not going to go to find out.
Yeah, come listen to our Lone Ranger episode for more on Bill Fichtner in that movie.
I'd love to sit in on that one.
In general,
speaking of the feel of the movie, did you take any... Where did you get your sort of inspiration for the feel of the movie? Was there any like specific scenes you were referencing, anything else? Or
well, if there's one movie that there's quite a few Dolomite references in the movie. Mm-hmm. Not quotes, but like
in tone of delivery, lines. And
there's one particular shouting match that could have been straight out of Dolomite if I'd had a little bit more headroom or a boom in the shot. but there's one movie in particular. I watched a ton of 70s movies before we made this. I didn't want it to look like a fake grindhouse movie. I wanted it to look like something that was contemporary and yet had touches of the 70s in it. And I think the stuff that Dave Fulkerson did in order to achieve that is kind of remarkable. He's created something that looks utterly unique. One movie that I went back to a lot was called Trick Baby. From I think 1975, it's a very obscure movie based on I think an Iceberg Slim book, and it has this really amazing look to it, and it's got a lot of wide angle lens and a lot of just kind of avant garde aesthetic to it that elevates it from like just being a gritty blaxploitation movie into something unique.
There's a lot of movies, I had seen a lot of blaxploitation movies before we started writing this, But the ones that I'd all seen were ones that were like, you know, really low budget, completely independent blaxploitation films. I'd never really watched many of the ones that actually would have had some studio money thrown at it. And one that you turned me on to was Black Caesar, which I thought was just a tremendous, like, you know, that, very, I don't know if you've ever seen it. I can
Black Caesar, I think we stole a little bit of
but, like, you know, the tone of the mayor and his swagger and how he deals with the people around him. I mean, like, you know, we'd already written this before I saw the movie. You recommended it to me after we already had the script
and
done.
But that was kind of a, I should have not, maybe not recommended this to you, because it's we did take a little bit of the shoeshine stuff. That was literally from the real Lee Alexander's life, and it's also in Black Caesar, to, you know, to a more powerful kind of Greek tragedy degree than it is in our film. But that was definitely a big influence.
Yeah, film.
It has that fantastic, like, full, you know, it's very vibrant. I mean, this is, like you said, highly stylized movie, very vibrant. It has that feel to it, and that for me was a lot of what endeared it to me so much, was just that you're looking at this and, like, you just don't see movies in this budget level that are this stylized, that are this, you know, that have this kind of look to them. You know, I mean,
nice.
I think that's down to the level of confidence in the crew and the craftspeople that were involved in it. We were all pretty experienced. And I more than anyone. And I mean experienced in the biblical sense.
That's right. That's right.
I you know, the talent that we got to work for free is just
staggering.
Yeah, it's humbling.
When there's so many people, we're gonna have to wrap up in a minute before all our viewers abandon us, or listeners abandon us. But there's so many people, like so many other reasons for people to see this. I mean, Kaylee Givens, who we've barely even talked about,
she's
fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Actually, really should mention. We've only mentioned a handful of the actors that are in this.
Well,
we've
only mentioned me.
Tom Minion plays Chief Ofinaway, Tom Minion is a remarkable. Syracuse Area Live Theater multi-nominated actor. I've seen him in all sorts of fantastic dramatic roles, and he can really do comedy. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, actually, when he came and auditioned, I had him to do two different roles, and I had him do the chief, and I had him do the union shop steward.
Yeah.
And I gotta tell you, I mean, I was just like, when I got done, I was like, you know, he could play every single male role in this film.
Yeah.
Like, he could pull it off. Tom is just that good. David Minnikin pulled off a great low-key but menacing and dark role as the mayor's consigliere. And we had so many other fantastic people just be a part of this. I mean, like, you know, from the Syracuse, Benai Ferdabu has a great, small, wonderful role in this. You know, all these people that, like, you know, like, are really big local players in theater that were willing to be in the film for, like, you know, 8 seconds, you know, in one case.
Yeah.
You know, just like a friend of mine, Teresa Constantine, who's an amazing actress and, like, has done so many other different great plays in the area. She plays the lawyer and doesn't have a single word, you know, but she just wanted to be in the film. It was tremendous, tremendous, the amount of talent that we have in this thing.
It is, yeah.
Before we wrap up, I have a little bit of a surprise for you.
Oh no! Usually surprises on this show go really bad.
We don't worry; it's not biblical.
Please tell me it's not a double cross, because we have a bad history of double crosses on this show.
No. Okay. This might be fun to talk about just briefly. So this morning, we were recording some interviews yesterday, and we were discussing the early drafts of the movie. Well, I found the first draft this morning, just going through my email, and I read it. I speed read it. And, you know, it's not bad. You know how you go back to your old writing and you think, well, this is cringeworthy, but it's actually not too bad. It's very talky. It's a lot wordier. There's a lot more characters in it, but it has a completely different ending.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this?
I have every version of the script.
I didn't remember
every
this. I haven't
one.
Seen this in more than
Do you
a
know
year.
How many drafts we wrote? I think 14.
14. Yeah, that's not surprising. Well, do you remember this? Here's what happens at the end of this movie. Basically, the FBI is on him. Mm-hmm. And he goes to Sal and he says, okay, go find some dirt for me, like earlier on in the movie. And so the mayor, all this stuff is unfolding, all the dominoes are falling near the end. And so he says, okay, take me to the TV station. I have an announcement to make. He has a scene in the back where he hits on the makeup girl. He's taken to the studio. He sits down live on TV, and he takes out a gun.
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow.
He sets the gun on the table, and he's like, don't worry, I'm not going to shoot anyone. I just want to make sure you're still on the air. You're going to stay on the air live while I get this out. And he goes on to deliver this long speech about MKUltra and the CIA, and he's uncovered this thing that the CIA is going to murder John Lennon in 5 years. And so he uncovers this plot against the Beatles to murder them one by one. And so, you know, the montage at the end, he's restored to power and everything, you know, the FBI gets off his back because they've completely, they're calling this rumor of the conspiracy. This montage ends with the Beatles reuniting in 2001 minus Ringo. and it ends. It has the same ending.
Which, face
as before.
It, you know, I mean, if they could do it without Ringo.
Yeah, but
Pete Best is still available. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But think of how much people would have hated this movie.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, talk about dodging a bullet.
That ending speech.
Right. The speech that I loved, the reason that I wanted to do this movie was the one
that showed up around draft 7.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
Then in a later draft, John Lennon was actually, like, you know, the person behind the whole downfall of the mayor.
Then
we changed it to Ginsburg.
See, that's such a gutsy call, because most people would have been like, oh, it definitely would have been McCartney. Everyone knows he's a jerk. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I guess that would have been a risk on our part.
Well, this is great. We're going to update. Well, let's do some plugs. How can people learn more about the movie? Is it on the interwebs?
As we're speaking, I'm working on that process. I'm hoping to get it on, you know, the usual places, Amazon Instant and Netflix. But for now, you can go to weefully.com or follow us on Twitter at Kingly Movie. And we're also on Facebook.
And that's Weefully spelled F-O-R, W-E-F-O-R-L-E-E. It's not a number 4.
And actually, we have something we call the Andy Wolf clause in this show. You have to say www.
www.
World Wide Web.
HTTP.
Yeah.
Transfer protocol.
Transfer protocol.
Right.
AOL.com.
www. Or you can go
to... Find a computer.
That's right. That's right.
Turn it on.
Find a friend that has a computer.
Go to the library.
Go to www.altavista.com. And
Hotbot was
that's
up.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we for lead, dot com. We're gonna also update the. I'm sure on our Twitter accounts we're gonna be tweeting about this too, and where people can get this movie and see it. And
follow us on Twitter because we have maybe 34 followers. I know we don't tweet that often, but
I think that's why we don't have many
not much of an audience out there.
Not so much tweeting as twitting at this point.
Yeah, it's crickets.
Yeah. I'm sure Cody, Cody's on Twitter
at Cody A. Wolf.
And at Wind Up Films, and we'll be pushing. Follow that when you know we'll let you know just where you can get King Lee
and guys. Randy Andy Wolf.
Randy.
Oh, and Randy Andy Wolf.
Randy,
you got to follow
Randy. Like the Wolf.
Yeah, yes. Randy. Yeah, it's fantastic. We're gonna release an exclusive spoiler. I happen to know that the commentary track for King Lee is gonna be recorded moments from now.
That's right.
Possibly just feet from here. Away. So yeah, that's a little bonus for people looking at the DVD. These three guys are gonna be doing a hijinks filled commentary.
Yeah,
track.
And someone's getting strangled.
Oh yeah,
and it's gonna be John.
That
I'm not gonna say who it is, but it's gonna be me.
Yeah.
Usually you have to pay extra for that.
Well, you know, I thought I already did that, Nate.
And we will definitely want to have all three of you guys back for regular Stop the Movie episode. Well, Tim Ferlito, who's a regular on this show as it is. Tim,
he's on more than my father is.
That's true.
Really?
That's true, yeah.
I'd love to do a podcast. Unfortunately, I live in Boston.
Well, we're going to get you next time.
I'd love to.
Yeah, next time you're in town, yeah. We're definitely bringing you on for
one. I love your podcast, and yeah. I recommend it to everyone.
And Nathan, we're going to bring you in for one, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tim, you know you're going to be back on. Yeah.
Anytime. Yeah. Always a pleasure.
Tim still has the honor of being on our most popular episode, Jaws 4, The Revenge. Which may or may not have actually sunk our old website. So Tim Ferrito may be directly responsible for the crash of our old website.
Yeah, it was personal.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Or did the shark do it? We never thought of that.
You never found out who it was personal for. Yeah. You never did.
Yeah. I guess for the shark's
family. Can it really be personal if it's a shark? I mean, isn't it like shark-anal or something? It's not a person.
Wow. That's
it's
right.
It's a person.
You just blew my mind.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not difficult. Yeah,
yeah.
Although the shark has very personal emotions in that movie, and in Jaws 4.
Is that the one where the shark roars?
Yes.
Like in Sharknado, the shark roars.
Yes. Here's the thing: I didn't realize that I was like in the middle of like the amazing cultural phenomenon of Sharknado. I was just flipping through the channels. Me and Sarah had just gotten home, looking to turn on something just to relax for a bit before we go to bed, and like, holy crap, Sharknado!
Oh, I was following the production.
I didn't realize
that
was like I just tuned into the premiere of. Like this highly anticipated shit fest.
Yeah.
And it's like we watched like the first 10 minutes of it, and she said, like, if you don't turn this off, I'm just going to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just figured they couldn't top themselves after Sharktopus.
That's right. I tried to write a sci-fi original movie at one point that called Curse of the Squid Platyclops.
In that. I want to be.
It's actually not too bad. It's a hybrid.
That's the problem.
It's a hybrid squid platypus.
Shark cyclops. Octopus.
And a cyclops. It's got one eye. And squid platyclops.
Oh, my God.
And oh, I think I even evolved it to be squid platycloptopus.
Isn't it?
Yeah. With four tentacles. Oh. Hopefully that'll show up on the Stop the Movie podcast
That could be. Yeah.
We can only dream.
Yeah.
I hope someone steals that idea now that it's out there.
That someone from sci-fi right now is like frantically writing.
This is gold.
Somebody just submitted that to the Writers Guild. Like, you know, to stick that.
I should probably copyright that.
No worries.
You hop on your phone and doing it. It's like, damn it, it's taken already.
We've just touched upon the sequel to King Lee.
The natural progression.
The squid platycloptopus.
Well, it's like Mayor Lee just like walking down to like, you know, the Inner Harbor edge. Yeah. Walking in, coming out.
This will be like the 80s kind of version of the story.
Exactly.
So it would be like an 80s monster movie.
Yeah, tie in toxic waste and you've got
Mayor Lee's movie. All right. This will be out.
We're going to build a sewage treatment plant over on the west side. Well, not a shark platycloptopus has anything to say. But.
It came from Onondaga Lake.
Yep. Again. All right.
Well, very good, gentlemen. We will have you all on again. And final point, people get to check out King Lee. And then we'll be back next week with a bad movie. This is a special edition. We may be back with another Start the Movie episode down the road if we let Andy Wolf pick one. So I'd look for that never. We will be back soon, though. All right, bye. Okay, I know we just left, but now we're back. We have some updated information. King Lee is going to be out on DVD October 29th. You can pre-order this. If it's not October 29th when you're listening to this, you can go to the weforlee.com website and pre-order it. If it's after October 29th, just get the DVD. It's available. But yeah, that's it. Go out, buy it. You have the information. You don't need any more information from us. Buy it and enjoy it. And if you love it, tweet us. Let us know about it at @WindUpFilms. If you hate it, just keep your mouth shut, okay? Nobody likes someone. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. That's the new philosophy of this show. That's what we're now based on. So yeah, I think that's all we've got. There's your quick update. Bye.